Good morning and welcome to another edition of Mornings for the Master here on the Gospel Radio Network. I'm your host this morning, Richard Rutledge, along with
Nate Mizell.
And we're glad that you have joined us as we continue our study through the Old Testament. We are going to be in Song of Solomon this morning. We're going to do an introduction of it and look through a portion of that text. So if you want to have your Bibles there, we'll be getting there shortly. But before we do, we have several events that are going on that we want to invite you to and make you aware of, things that are going on even today that are beginning. And Nate, what do you have on the bulletin board?
Well, we got Putting Yourself in a Position to Succeed. It's Youth Night with J.J. Hendricks. It's Monday, September 11th at 6 p.m. at the Broadway Church of Christ. And says a meal will be provided beginning at 5:30 if you want to get there and eat first.
All right, and that's in conjunction with the Searching the Scriptures Forum, which starts tonight at 7 p.m. And that is also at the Broadway Church of Christ there in Tyler, Texas. They're located at 100 Cumberland Road. And the Searching the Scriptures Forum will be broadcast here on the Gospel Radio Network as well. But it begins at 7 p.m. nightly, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Three speakers that are on the panel dealing with various questions that have been submitted. And Robert Johnson, Chris Groda, and Sam Wilcutt are going to be dealing with these questions. Now, Robert Johnson is from the Longview Church of Christ, Chris Groda from the Mount Pleasant, North Jefferson congregation there, and Sam Wilcutt over at Bossier City in Bossier City, Louisiana. And they will deal with questions. Tonight's questions, Robert Johnson will deal with, do elders rule? What authority do they have? And explain the necessary inference versus silence of the Scripture. Chris Groda has been given the task of, is the body of Christ an institution? And please describe the role of the Holy Spirit in the plan of salvation. Sam Wilcutt's two questions. Some congregations have a singer of all four parts singing into a microphone. Is this a praise team concept scriptural? And are two ladies singing soprano and alto usurping authority over men in the congregation? The second question, please explain more about the resurrected body discussed in 1 Corinthians 15. Words such as body and spirit can be confusing at times. They'll have various questions through the remainder of the week. But again, you can get information. Give them a call, 903-561-9560. And I know that they'd be glad if you were there tonight beginning at 7 p.m.
All right, we got a Ladies' Day Make Me a Servant workshop in North Main Church of Christ. It's September 23rd. Speaker is Lisa Harris, and registration is at 9 a.m., and it kicks off at 9:30. It says lunch will be provided, and please RSVP Amanda at her number 225-326-9179 by September 1st if you plan on going. And that is in Malvern, Arkansas.
All right, that same day, out at Camp Item, we're going to have an open house. There's been a lot of work done at Camp Ida over the earlier this year before sessions started. We want to share that with folks, let them also know about what's planned. The flyer says, in this 41st year of operation of Camp Ida, a lot of changes have taken place and more improvements are in the work. The Mount Vernon Church of Christ elders and the congregation would like to take this opportunity for you to see the work that has been done and to thank those who have made it possible and to look to the future of the camp. Please be our guest as we enjoy the day together and get a chance to update you on all the exciting changes taking place to the facilities that will continue to serve as a place where the Bible is taught, God is glorified, and Christian fellowship grows. This is going to be September the 23rd at the camp, beginning 11 a.m. to around 4 p.m. Says join us beginning at 11 a.m. to look at the camp, enjoy games throughout the afternoon, and hamburgers will be provided at noon. John McCormack will be the guest speaker of the day. Ask that you RSVP the Mount Vernon Church of Christ at 903-537-4129 or shoot us an email at campidatx@gmail.com.
We got one more. It's a marriage and family seminar, and it is September 15th through 17th. It's there with John and John Moore. And it says that Friday, September 15th, the General Assembly starts at 7 p.m. and goes to 7:50. The Prince of Peace is the theme, and breakout session is 8 to 9 p.m. And it has the tools for relationship building for men and women that day. And September 16th, it's going to start. The General Assembly is going to be at 9:30 a.m. to 10:30. And the topic there is a love that never ends. And breakout session is 10:45 to 11:45. And that today, the class breakout session should be Death to Destructive Habits for Men and Women. And Sunday, September 17th, his Bible class and sermon starts at 9 a.m.
All right. Well, that looks like all that we have on the bulletin board this morning, Nate. If you're aware of something, shoot us an email at mornings@tgrn.org, mornings@tgrn.org, and we'll do our very best to get that information out in a timely manner so that folks will be aware of those events in your area. Well, we're going to continue our study through the Old Testament in the Song of Solomon just a moment. But before we do, we're going to take just a brief break, so stay with us. Good morning and welcome back to Mornings for the Master here on the Gospel Radio Network. Again, I'm your host, Richard Rutledge, joined by Nate Mizell, and we are glad that you have joined us today as we continue our study through the Old Testament. We are looking this morning at the Song of Solomon, and as we go through the Song of Solomon this morning, some introductory thoughts to get us going. And that is looking at the author, the time of writing, a general theme, things of that nature as we make introductory thoughts to it. Now, the Hebrew name, Song of Solomon, basically means the best of all songs. The Song of Songs is how it is titled. When we go through this book, it's an interesting book. The name of God is not mentioned at all in this book, and so some people have a hard time wondering why it is in the Scriptures. It's a book that seems odd at times because of the nature of it, the personal and sensual nature of it, even of this book. The author of the book, when we consider its authorship, well, the Bible claims there in the very first verse of it that this is the Song of Songs of Solomon, and is written by Solomon. It is there in verse number 1 as well. There are various indications throughout it that it is written by royalty. Verse 12, mentioning the king, chapter 3, verses 6 through 11, also showing us that the traveling couch of Solomon mentioned there. And so we have an authorship Penman of Solomon. We have a date of about, logically, if it's Solomon, it's going to be around 960 B.C. When we look at it as well, there are divisions as it divides out. We see the three main divisions. It deals with before the marriage as it takes place in the honeymoon, and then after the marriage, or difficulties that will be faced. We could look, as Brother Kate suggested, an outline. I think it works well, and that is if we go chapter 1 through chapter 3, verse 5, the courtship of the bridegroom and the bride-to-be. Chapter 3, verse 6 through chapter 5, verse 1 is the wedding procession, the wedding and the honeymoon. And then chapter 5 through the remainder is marriage difficulties, those difficulties resolved, and growth of marital bliss. I thought that was a fairly good and short, precise outline that we could go through, dividing it up into three. Our task before us today is to look through chapter 5. As we have been tasked, we're going to look and do as much as we can as we go through this. There are also some things that we would do well to try to figure out as well, and that is how this is to be interpreted. And with it, some suggest that it's just put out there to be allegorical. And, you know, there are things within Scripture that God has given that are allegorical in nature, but it does not seem that this would be the case, because there are things within the book that are graphic in nature. Some say it's typology, and it is the idea that it's pointing to Christ and the church. This book is in nowhere in the New Testament referenced or application. And so many times, you know, we can see that there's types and typology that are given. We see things in the Old Testament, and then in the New Testament tells us that's exactly what it is, letting the Bible be its own best commentary. Some suggest that it is just a drama, as even Nate, you mentioned a moment ago, you know, as you're looking over and reading, it seems to be written like a play almost, as a drama that plays out there. But there are some weaknesses with that view as well. There is the literal. It is the fact that it is to be interpreted completely literal. But then there's a more maybe more appropriate thought, and that is didactic moral. This interpretation is similar to the literal view, but it has the idea that it was written to teach moral principles. And this book, the Song of Solomon, would be read at the Passover, many believe, because most of the women would be present at this feast, and so it would be an excellent time to teach husbands and wives how they should feel about one another, how they deal with, you know, the differences and the problems that go along. It is a time then that it also provides for, if we think about it this way, as a didactic moral, it provides Christians or God's children at that time some direction about sex and marriage. The fact that God has, you know, made these things as a blessing for the marriage, and it's not wrong. You know, the idea that all sex is wrong, that's not true. The illicit sex outside of marriage is what is condemned, not that which was within the marriage. And so, you know, maybe we could say that it is a commentary on there in Genesis chapter 2, verse 24, when it says the man shall be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh, and they are going to have this. So when we think about this and we go through it, let's notice a few things. And we're going to note key words that come out throughout it. Beloved. I mean, this is a you know, this book written about the one that he loves. And so the beloved is 33 times used. Love is 18 times. Beauty or beautiful is 15 times. Key verses we could talk about. My beloved is mine and I am his. Chapter 2, verse number 16, and other places are also mentioned. I am my beloved and his desire is for me. Chapter 7, verse 10. Pointing out several of these things. Now, if we take this outline and we go through the idea of the outline dealing with the courtship of the bridegroom and the bride-to-be, we're going to see some interaction and conversation that seems to go about leading up to that point. And that'll take us chapter 1 through chapter 3, or half of chapter 3. But as we do so, let's look at chapter 1, and we'll break it up, verses 1 through 4, just the A part of that. And as we do, we'll notice the choice of courtship.
All right. The Songs of Solomon, which is Solomon's. Let him kiss me with his kisses of his mouth, for your love is better than wine. Because of the fragrance of your good ointments, your name is ointment poured forth. Therefore, the virgins love you. Draw me away.
I mean, right here, the bridegroom begins to anticipate. And it's that is something that she is looking forward to, is the kiss of her husband-to-be. She is anticipating that moment in time. And, you know, that is something that, again, that desire is something that God has given to us. But it is to be fulfilled within the marriage. They're leading up. They're courting at this time, and they're leading up to this thing. And so she is anticipating and looking forward to the plans and that event transpiring. But it also, when we notice a few things, that is that your anointing oils are fragrant. Your name is oil poured out. I mean, there is this great desire that she has towards him. She is pleased with what those choices are. He is bringing her these things. But also, it continues, and not only is there this choice of courtship that she has made, but notice it also is celebrated. Read that B part of verse number 4 now.
We will run after you.
Okay, now, we will be glad and rejoice in you. We will remember your love, is the idea of it, more than wine, and the upright love you. If we see what he says there in the B part, you know, not only will we draw after you, let us run there in the beginning, but now it says, the king has brought me into his chamber, others will exalt and rejoice in you. Okay, and so now there is this celebration that this event has taken place, but there is also some concern. Notice verses 5 and 6.
I'm dark but lovely, O daughter of Jerusalem, like the tents of Kedar, like the curtains of Solomon. Do not look upon me because I am dark, because the sun has tanned me. My mother's son were angry with me. They made me the keeper of the vineyards, but my own vineyard I have not kept.
Now, when you notice this, there is the fact that she mentions her skin tone, and she's black or dark. And when we look at it, she says the sun has burned me, or the sun has given her darkness, and people even stare because of it. She's worried that her fiancé may not desire, desire one of the who had veiled themselves other than herself. You know, I mean, the idea was that the light skinned and different things as well were there. There's this concern of courtship. Notice now the contentment, verses 7 and 8.
Tell me, O you whom I love, where you feed your flock. where you make it rest at noon? For why should I be as one who veils herself, but the flocks of your companions? If you do not know, O fairest among women, follow in the footsteps of the flock and feed your little goats beside the shepherd's tent.
Now, here she is again. She's like, why should I be like one who veils herself, protects herself in such a way? She's darkened because she's been out there in these pastures, in these field areas. She wants to know where his flock is kept. It reminds me of what takes place in Genesis when Rachel comes out and waters the camels and such, or even as we see in Exodus, Genesis as well, with the caring of those livestock, the women coming out there and doing such thing and finding their, eventually finding their spouses there. She says, why should I be as one who hides in the shade? Let me know where you tend your flocks. And his response is, verse 8 is his response to the bridegroom, to the bride to be. And he says, if you do not know, O most beautiful among women, and that's what he addresses her as. There is this delight that they're having with one another. And his response is, why would I want anyone else, basically? And so he is content with this courtship. Now, notice verses 9. Let's just go through the end of the chapter. As now he is going to say a few things. There's going to be an exchange, what others say, what she says, what he's going to say, as we go through this. And notice how they communicate, the communication of this courtship.
I have compared you, my love, to my filly among Pharaoh's chariots. Your cheeks are lovely with ornaments, your neck with chains of gold. We will make you ornaments of gold with studs of silver. While the king is at his table, my spikenard sends forth his fragrance. A bundle of myrrh is my beloved to me, that lies all night between my breasts. My beloved is to me a cluster of henna blooms in the vineyard of Engedi. Behold, you are fair, my love. Behold, you are fair. You have dove's eyes. Behold, you are handsome, my beloved. Yes, pleasant. Also, our bed is green. The beams of our houses are cedar, and our rafters of fir.
All right. Now, when we look at this, I mean, he starts out, it doesn't seem like something that you would want to tell your fiance. Okay? I've compared you to the horses in Pharaoh's chariots, okay? I've compared you to my mare. He then speaks to her. Now, he is speaking to her of the way of her beauty and addressing her in that way. He does speak of this. He says, you are very beautiful, and calls her his darling, my love here. But he also, it is the address of term of endearment. My love, you are, as one who is adorned with beauty. Her response, though, is that he is as pleasing to her as she is to him. He's like the fragrance, a spikenard, a perfume body bottle. He's like this sachet of myrrh that is around her neck. There's this pleasant odor and pleasantry that continually comes to her because of him. Verse 15, again, you are beautiful. You have eyes of a dove, speaking to her. And she, in turn, speaks to him that he is beautiful to her. And notice what he says, the beams of our house are cedar and the rafters are pine. She is now pleased with these things. There's complimentary remarks made to one another. you know, when you think about this, okay, how does this even, this first chapter, let's just think, how does that even fit in to, you know, why is it here? Well, it introduces even for us this relationship between the two and how these two can interact. He speaks to her in soft terms, and she responds in soft terms, finding out these things which are good and complimenting. Yeah. You know, I mean, that goes a long way. He compliments her. He's not tearing her down, but he's building her up. She's not tearing him down, but she's building him up. And, oh, if husbands and wives and men and women could even understand that today, you know, we have been drawn into a societal belief that, you know, you just point out the negative in everyone. Yeah. And at times it frustrates me when I hear husbands and wives speaking to one another and drawing out their flaws in front of others. Yes, we all have our flaws, and they're going to deal with this. There's going to be difficulties in a marriage. But when we focus on the good and not on the negative all the time, then we build the other up, and they want to be better, and they want to do better. But when we continually make them feel dumb or, you know, stupid and inadequate, then it's not going to be beneficial. Here they continually build one another up in this manner. But when we get to chapter 2, we are still in this courtship phase. As we notice these things, notice in chapter 2 now, we're going to go through, let's notice just the, let's see which verses we want to read in chapter 2 to begin with. And in this chapter, let's just go through verse 7 to begin with.
All right. I am the rose of Sharon and the lily of the valleys. Like a lily among thorns, so is my love among the daughters. Like an apple tree among the trees of the woods, so is my beloved among the sons. I sat down in his shade with great delight, and his fruit was sweet to my taste. He brought me to the banqueting house, and his banner over me was love. Sustained me with cakes of raisins, fresh me with apples, for I am lovesick. His left hand is under my head, and his right hand embraces me. I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, by the gazelles or by the does of the field. Do not stir up nor awaken love until it pleases.
All right. Now, Solomon begins here, and with it is this description. You know, here in chapter 2, verse 1, we could, you know, carry that over. We should have actually dealt with that with she. Responds there at the end of chapter 1 when she says, behold, you are beautiful, my beloved, truly delightful. Our couch is green, and the beams of the house are cedar, and the rafters are pine. But then in chapter 2, when we look at it, it begins with, I am a rose of Sharon and a lily of the valleys. Now, this is still her. And now Solomon's description of it then is his response. He says, now I am, it's as the lily among thorns, so is my beloved among the daughters. Now, again, he continues this complimentary remark. Remember earlier he says, you're like the mare in Pharaoh's chariot. You have eyes like a dove. And now he says, you are like a rose among the thorns. Compared to all the other women that are out there, I mean, they don't even compare. They're not even flowers. Yeah, and so he says, this is the way that I see you. In my eyes, you are the only one, literally, a lily among thorns. And then, when we notice what happens, she responds as well. And she is speaking from verse 3 all the way through verse 7. And with that, it is showing her devotion. His description of her, her devotion is then mentioned. And here she says, as an apple tree among the trees of the forest, so is my beloved among the young men. And with that, she says, what's going to happen? I sat down under his shadow with great delight. His fruit was sweet to my taste. He's going to be the one that she is dedicated to. She's sitting down. She has made the choice to rest under his tree. And he would provide for her. We see that with Ruth and Boaz as he provides and she comes to under the shadow of his protection. We see Jesus even speaking to Jerusalem in such a way where he says, as he laments over Jerusalem, he says that he would have been, as the mother hen, taking the chicks under her wing and under that idea of protection there. She is also saying there is the dedication to him and for him. She's going to be in his shade for comfort, protection, and he will supply. He will supply even in the banqueting hall and every application that goes along with it. Now, notice Solomon's declaration, chapter 2, verse 8, and let's go through verse 13 now.
The voice of my beloved, behold, he comes, leaping upon the mountain, skipping upon the hills. My beloved is like a gazelle or a young stag. Behold, he stands behind our wall. He is looking through the windows, gazing through the lattice. My beloved spoke and said to me, rise up, my love, my fair one, and come away. For lo, the winter is past. The rain is over and gone. The flowers appear on the earth. The time of singing has come. And the voice of the turtle dove is heard in our land. The fig tree puts forth her green figs, and the vines with tender grapes give a good smell. Rise up, my love, my fair one, and come away.
All right. Here it is the fact that, you know, she says, this is the voice of my beloved. And he is like, he comes leaping over the mountain and bounding over the hills. He's like a gazelle or a young stag. Again, she's speaking of him, but then here's what he says to her. Here's his declaration in verses 10 and following. Arise, my love, my beautiful one, and come. He adores her, and he speaks to her in such a way, calling for her. When Brother Colley, Gary Colley, book The Ideal Home, he related in it how 15 couples had been married over a total of 900 years. You know, if you think about, add up all the time that they had been there, and in this time there were 18 suggestions that were made to make a successful marriage, and they mentioned several of these, and here we're in this courtship phase in the Song of Solomon. Have a long courtship. Approach marriage seriously, which we see them doing. Be sure that you love one another when you get married. And we can see this love looking forward to marriage here, even in this book. He mentions, you know, marry a Christian, put God first, live by God's book. All of the great suggestions that go forward as we consider some of these things. They're looking forward to a marriage, and as they look forward to this marriage, he calls for her. But then the bride's desire continues. Notice verses 14 through the end of the chapter now.
Oh, my dove in the clefts of the rock, it is in the secret places of the cliff. Let me see your face, let me hear your voice, for your voice is sweet and your face is lovely. Catch us the foxes, the little foxes that spoil the vines, for our vines have tender grapes. My beloved is mine, and I am his. He feeds his flock among the lilies until the day breaks and the shadows flee away. Turn, my beloved, and be like a gazelle or a young stag upon the mountains of Bethur.
Now, again, here's one of our key verses that we were talking about, and that's there in verse number 16. My beloved is mine, and I am his. And this goes back to, you know, here in the very beginning of this chapter, he says, as a lily among the thorns, so is my love among the daughters. In other words, there's only one flower out there, and she's mine. And my beloved is mine, and I am his, she says as well. He that feeds among the lilies. She's saying, you know what? He that's out there feeding among the lilies and all the flowers that are out there, he's mine. There is this declaration by both that there is no other. And when we consider this, this is the vow that is going to be made on the wedding day. And that is that she's mine and there's no other, and I'm hers and there's no other for her. There is this declaration. And this comment will be made again. We get to chapter 6 and verse number 3. I am my beloved, and my beloved is mine. He that feedeth among the lilies. The very same statement is again repeated. Chapter 7 and verse number 10. I am my beloved, and his desire is towards me. And that is as well key, not to a successful marriage. And that is making sure that each other has this dedication to the thought that we belong to one another and no other, but also that the desire is kept for that one. He mentions this here. Now, let's jump over quickly, and we don't have a hard time to cover five chapters, but we're going to do our best. And as we do, let's notice chapter 3 now. And in chapter 3, let's think about chapter 3. Let's go through, which verses do we want to go? Let's go through verse number 5 in chapter 3.
All right. By night on my bed I sought the one I love. I sought him, but I did not find him. I will rise now, I said, and go about the city, in the streets, and in the squares. I will seek the one I love. I sought him, but I did not find him. The watchmen who go about the city found me. I said, have you seen the one I love? Scarcely had I passed by them when I found the one I love. I held him and would not let him go until I had brought him to the house of my mother, and into the chamber of her who conceived me. I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, by the gazelles or by the does of the field, do you stir up nor awaken love until it pleases.
Go ahead and read verse 6 with that then.
Who is this coming out of the wilderness like pillars of smoke, perfumed?
Oh, wait a minute, that goes with the wedding. Sorry, that is the arrival for the wedding. Let's just look now. Here's what the bridegroom, the bride is desiring. She is seeking the groom's companionship, and as she does, it is, you know, this dream almost. It says, by night on my bed I sought him whom my soul loves. In the middle of the night, here she is. She had thought about this thing and dreaming of it, and what did she do? She says, I'll rise now, and she goes out into the street. She's looking for him. I'm looking for him all over the place, and he says, she's caught by the watchman. He wants to know what you're doing out this late. She is looking for him. And when she finds him, she's not going to let him go. There is her desire. Well, he's going to arrive. And he arrives, Solomon arrives for the wedding in verses 6 through 11.
All right. Who is this coming out of the wilderness like pillars of smoke, perfumed with myrrh of frankincense, with all the merchant's fragrant powders? Behold, it is Solomon's coach, with 60 valiant men around it of the valiant of Israel. They all hold swords, being expert in war. Every man has his sword on his thigh because of fear in the night. Of the woods of Lebanon, Solomon the king made himself a plaque. Plaquenquin. He made its pillars of silver, its supported of gold, its seat of purple, its interior paved with love, and the daughters of Jerusalem. Go forth, O daughters of Zion, and see King Solomon with the crown with which his mother crowned him on the day of his wedding, the day of the gladness of his heart.
All right. Now, here's a problem for folks who want to say that it's not Solomon who is the penman. Notice who arrives for the wedding. And it is the fact that it says that it is Solomon. Behold, is the litter of Solomon. Verse number 7. It is the bed which is Solomon's. Here he comes. What has he done? Well, King Solomon, verse number 9, has made him a carriage. I think the King James, if we look at it, it says made him a chariot of wood. Yours said what there in verse number 9?
Palanquin.
A palanquin, verse number 9. But it is a chariot. He said he has made it of the wood of Lebanon, the cedars of Lebanon that he would also use in the building. It tells us how beautiful this chariot is for this marriage purpose as he has come over. And, O daughters of Zion, look upon King Solomon with the crown which his mother crowned him on the day of his wedding. And so it is King Solomon now who is the one who is to marry this bride. He arrives for the wedding, and when he does, notice chapter 4, he now looks upon and admires the beauty of his bride. Chapter 4, let's go through verses, well, basically it's nearly the whole chapter, verses through verse 15, and we'll stop and leave that last one, 16, for afterwards.
All right. Behold, you are fair, my love. Behold, you are fair. You have dove's eyes behind your veil. Your hair is like a flock of goats going down them from Mount Gilead. Your teeth are like a flock of shorn sheep, which have come up from the washing, every one of which bears twins, and none is barren among them. Your lips are like a strand of scarlet, and your mouth is lovely. Your temples behind you, your veil, are like a piece of pomegranate. Your neck is like the Tower of David, built for an armory, in which hang 1,000 bucklers, all shields of mighty men. Your two breasts are like two fawns, twins of a gazelle, which feed among the lilies. Until the day breaks and the shadows flee away, I will go my way to the mountain of Mirah and to the hill of frankincense. You are all fair, my love, and there is no spot in you. Come with me from Lebanon, my spouse, with me from Lebanon. Look from the top of Amana, from the top of Sinar and Hermon, from the lion's dens, from the mountains of the leopards. You have ravished my heart, my sister, my spouse, you have ravished my heart. With one look of your eyes, with one link of your necklace, how fair is your love, my sister, my spouse. How much better than wine is your love, and the scent of your perfumes than all spices. Your lips of my, oh my spouse, drip as the honeycomb. Honey and milk are under your tongue, and the fragrance of your garments is like the fragrance of Lebanon. A garden enclosed is my sister, my spouse, a spring shut up, a fountain sealed. Your plants are an orchard of pomegranates with pleasant fruits, fragrant henna, with spikenard and saffron, calamus and cinnamon, with all trees of frankincense, myrrh and aloes, with the chief spices, a fountain of gardens, a well of living waters, and stream from Lebanon.
All right. Well, he here in these first few verses, verses 1 through 5, he's going to commend his bride again. And notice he speaks to her in terms of endearment, that he tells her how beautiful she is. She is his love. You are beautiful. Twice he says it here.
Sounds like he's talking right here, like it's they're like up there about to get married. He's like saying his vows to her right here. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah, and again, he's speaking to her in these terms again. You know, you have the eyes of a dove. Now, I don't know if you want to tell your fiance that she has her hair looks like goats leaping down a mountain, but you know the way that these goats coming off of Gilead would have been, it would have been beautiful. Your teeth, now he says, they are like a flock of shorn ewes. They are have come up from the washing. They're beautiful. He says they are bare twins. There is some symmetry in her smile and in her teeth, and the fact that when he looks at her, and there is no one among them has lost its young. It is beautiful. Your lips are beautiful. They're scarlet as a thread. And everything, you know, that he mentions as he looks upon her, he compliments her continually. And so she responds in verse number 6, until the day breathes and the shadows flees, I will go away to the mountain of myrrh and to the hill of frankincense. You know, and not yet. It's not until the evening that this would take place. But he now responds once again with this invitation in verses 7 through 15. He's going to say, come with me from Lebanon, my bride. Come with me from Lebanon and let us go. And he invites her to take this journey to a garden and to the places. He continually mentions all of these things that are of beauty there and her beauty as it continues on. And then she then will respond in the final verse, verse number 16.
Awake, O north wind, and come, O south. Blow upon my garden that its spices may flow out. Let my beloved come to his garden and eat its pleasant fruits.
He says, now, you know, she had already mentioned until the day breathes and the shadows flee, verse number 6, or until the day breaks and the shadows flee, she's going to go to the mountain of myrrh and the hill of frankincense. Now, at the end of it, the response is, let the wind blow to that point in time. And so this acceptance of this invitation. Now, this wedding that is going to take place with also the honeymoon to come is also going to be in chapter 5 and verse number, let's just read verse number 1 because it is a statement that sort of stands alone.
I have come to my garden, my sister, my spouse. I have gathered my myrrh with my spice. I have eaten my honeycomb with my honey. I have drunk my wine with my milk.
All right.
Hold on. It says, to his friends, eat, O friends, drink, yes, drink deeply, O beloved ones.
Okay. Now, when we look at chapter 5, there's going to be some difficulties now that arise in chapter 5. And it goes through chapter 6, and some have even titled Marriage Difficulties, and the idea that the groom is rejected and then he's sought. Now, notice what happens in verses 5 through 9.
I arose to open for my beloved, and my hands dripped with myrrh, my fingers with liquid myrrh on the handles of the lock. I opened for my beloved, but my beloved had turned away. Right. And was...
Let's start in chapter 5, verse 2.
Oh, I thought you said 5 through 9. I sleep, but my heart is awake. It is voice of my beloved. He knocks, saying, open for me, my sister, my love, my dove, my perfect one, for my head is covered with dew. My locks with the drops of the night I have taken off my robe. How can I put it on again? I have washed my feet. How can I defile them? My beloved put his hand by the latch of the door, and my heart yearned for him. I arose to open for my beloved, and my hands dripped with myrrh, my fingers with liquid myrrh on the handles of the lock. I opened for my beloved, but my beloved had turned away and was gone. My heart leaped up when he spoke. I sought him, but I could not find him. I called him, but he gave me no answer. The watchmen who went about the city found me. They struck me. They wounded me. The keepers of the walls took my veil away from me. I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, if you find my beloved, then you tell him I am lovesick. What is your beloved more than another beloved, O fairest among women? What is your beloved more than another beloved that you so charge us?
All right. Now, you know, when we begin here, it's the fact that she says that she awoke with her beloved knocking upon the door, wanting to come in, She hesitates in her response to make it to the door because she says, I put off my garment. How could I put it on? I bathed my feet. How could I soil them? And so the beloved put his hand upon the latch, and her heart was thrilled. But when she arose to open it, he was gone. He had left. And so there is the fact that now she went out looking for him. Some have mentioned the fact that, okay, maybe she's dreaming again, another dream sequence that's similar to chapter 3, which it sounds a lot like chapter 3. Yeah. And that is the fact that, you know, she says, there in my bed, I sought him, I thought about him, I sought him, and I went out into the streets looking for him, and I was going to bring him back to the house, couldn't find him. The watchman questioned her, why are you looking and who are you looking for? Well, the same thing happens here. And that is, you know, the watchman finds her, but this time they don't just question her. It says now she has been beaten and bruised and took away
her veil.
And so she is in a state of sickness, she says. Well, it keeps going, and as it can, now some have interpreted this, this could just be depending on, is it a dream sequence or is it the idea that there's this lapse in the sexual relationship within the marriage, one mate's desire for having the other. But anyhow, here's how she does. She arose and she opened the door. He wasn't there. She goes out looking for him. She does not find him. But then in verses 10 through the end of the chapter, she continues. Now she praises him, though.
My beloved is white and ruddy, chief among 10,000. His head is like the finest gold. His locks are wavy and black as a raven. His eyes are like doves by the rivers of waters, washed with milk and fitly set. His cheeks are like a bed of spices, banks of scented herbs. His lips are lilies, dripping liquid myrrh. His hands are rods of gold set with beryl. His body is carved ivory and laid with sapphires. His legs are pillars of marble set on bases of fine gold. His countenance is like Lebanon, excellent as the cedars. His mouth is most sweet. Yes, it is altogether lovely. This is my beloved. This is my friend, O daughters of Jerusalem.
Now, she's asked, remember, at the end of it, when she says that, if you see my beloved, tell him I'm sick with love. And their response is, well, what is your beloved among other beloveds? You know, remember how he had described her. She is a lily among thorns among the other women. Now, it's her turn to try to describe to them, well, who's your beloved? Who's your man that you're looking for? Well, this is what he is, and this is how he looks. And it says, he is radiant and ruddy, distinguished among 10,000. I think it's interesting. Solomon, David's son, David was ruddy, it mentioned. You know, he was a good-looking young man and ruddy in the terminology that was used. And he is distinguished among 10,000. What is he? As the head is the finest gold. His locks are wavy and black as a raven. And so, you know, we have this description. He says, here's what he looks like. He's radiant as ruddy, his skin tone, his hair is black. His eyes are like the doves beside the streams of water, bathed in milk and sitting beside a full pool. His cheeks are beds of spices. Again, as she mentions him, his legs are alabaster columns. His body is polished ivory. Everything that you look about him, his appearance is like Lebanon, choice as the cedars. She, in her eyes, he's the best looking thing out there. Mm-hmm. And she is trying her best to describe them. And so she said, this is my beloved and this is my friend. I think it's interesting as well in that very last statement that we're going to mention this morning, key for us, and this is my beloved and this is my friend. your spouse ought to be your best friend. Now, whether or not that's what the text is indicating here, but she does mention him as my beloved and my friend. You need to marry your best friend in that way. And that way, the two of you will have a good chance at making things work. Well, we're out of time today. Trying to rush through these five chapters of what at times is difficult to explain, you know, outside the fact of here's what it is. Here's this relationship between husband and wife to be, husband and wife, and difficulties that will arise, and lessons that we can learn and make application of the principles in our own marriages and in our own lives. Well, today you have listening opportunities. Good News Today is going to be on shortly with Jim Dearman, followed by Reflections Upon the Precious Book Divine with Rick Popejoy and crew. We also have tons of listening opportunities throughout the day and the week. All you have to do is click on the on-demand section. If you've missed anything, you want to go back and hear, you can listen to it there. But don't forget to tune in tomorrow morning and each morning at 9 a.m. Central Standard Time here weekdays, Mornings for the Master from Mount Vernon, Texas. Tomorrow, Ryan is going to continue this study. And until next time, we hope that you have a great and a blessed day.
You've been listening to Mornings for the Master on the Gospel Radio Network. Remember to join us each weekday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Central Standard Time, or catch the replay at 9 p.m. Central Time. You can also contact us at mornings@tgrn.org if you have any questions we can help you with, or if you have events you would like to submit to our bulletin board, or just with general feedback about the program or network. We would love to hear from you. As we've had opportunity to spend time with the Master this morning in His Word, let's remember His words in Luke 6:46, when He said, "Why call ye me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say?" He goes on to say in verse 47 and 48, "Whosoever cometh to me and heareth my sayings and doeth them, I will show to you whom he is like. He is like a man which built an house and digged deep and laid the foundation on a rock. And when the flood arose, the stream beat vehemently upon that house and could not shake it, for it was founded upon a rock." Let's show the wisdom of that builder and go now to live for the Master.
He is there.